Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, October 6th. Is Facebook as bad for democracy, as bad for children, as bad for racial and gender equality as it was portrayed to be in congressional testimony yesterday by whistleblower Frances Haugen? Should the government take action to reduce Facebook's potential for personal and social destruction? And if so, what would that government action be? If the right and left are both so angry at Facebook, but for politically opposite reasons, you know, censorship of the right versus enabling of right-wing disinformation, how do we get to the truth about its real impact? Listen to this from yesterday's hearing. The very conservative Republican Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi.
I talked to an opinion maker just down the hall a few moments before this hearing. This person said the tech gods have been demystified now. And I think this hearing today, Mr. Chair, is a part of the process of demystifying big tech. The children of America are hooked on their product. It is often destructive and harmful, and there is a cynical knowledge on behalf of the leadership of these big tech companies that that is true.
Roger Wicker from Mississippi, and here's the very liberal Democratic Senator, Edward Markey of Massachusetts.
Here's my message for Mark Zuckerberg. Your time of invading our privacy, promoting toxic content, and preying on children and teens is over.
So, can they both be right? Is this the only thing they agree on? And if so, why? Here's the whistleblower herself, armed with documents she took from the company, as well as her own, Frances Haugen's own, opinions, like this one.
The algorithms are very smart in the sense that they latch on to things that people want to continue to engage with. And unfortunately, in the case of teen girls and things like self-harm, they develop these feedback cycles where children are using Instagram as to self-soothe, but then are exposed to more and more content that makes them hate themselves.
So Mark Zuckerberg posted a response last night denying that the company puts profits over the safety and well-being of its users, certainly with respect to children, he said. He said the argument that, quote, we deliberately push content that makes people angry for profit is deeply illogical, unquote, from Mark Zuckerberg. We'll explore that. But on MSNBC this morning, the head of the NAACP, Derek Johnson, saw Facebook's algorithm as contributing to white supremacy and the violence that it spawns.
Facebook is the super spreader of hate. We said this last year when we helped organize Stop Hate for Profit with Anti-Defamation League, Color Change, and many others, because we begin to see whether it was the synagogue in Pittsburgh or the black church in Charleston or Louisville, Kentucky, the common denominator was Facebook. And at some point, we're going to have to address it, get in front of the narrative, not allow Zuckerberg and group to say they're going to do some modifications. In fact, we should be talking about antitrust right now, because it is too big of a company to spread the type of harm, not only to individuals and communities, but to our democracy.
Not only to individuals, but to our democracy. NAACP President Derek Johnson. Notice there that he called for the government to include antitrust measures. But would that fix the polarization and white supremacy problem, breaking up Facebook into several smaller companies? What else might be done? With me now is New York Times national technology correspondent Cecilia Kang. She is also the co-author with Shira Frankel of the book, An Ugly Truth, Inside Facebook's Battle for Domination. Cecilia, thanks for some time today on what I'm sure is a very busy day after that hearing with so many reactions coming in. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here.
So about the documents first that whistleblower Frances Haugen revealed, I think the most attention before this week has been on how Instagram hurts the self-image of girls, and the documents reveal the company knew it and didn't change to address it. How much is that backed up by the documents you've been able to see?
Yeah, I mean, the focus has been on the teens and Instagram research that Facebook has done internally that shows, as you said, that, for example, one out of three teenagers said to Facebook's researchers that they felt worse about their body image after using Instagram. There were 16% of users in the UK who said that those who had suicidal ideation could trace those thoughts and feelings directly to Instagram. Some pretty disturbing findings. But there was a lot of other research, Brian. There was a whole mountain of research that shows a pattern of the company researching and knowing of harms, such as the spread of disinformation in countries like Ethiopia and Myanmar that led to genocide and not putting the proper safeguards in place. Other documents, memos, and research that look into how the algorithms have amplified far-right groups in the U.S. that have led to things like the organization of the Capitol riots. There has been research in memos and emails from people within Facebook that discussed warnings that the company does not have the misinformation of vaccines under control. And all of this was never disclosed to the public until Frances Haugen came out and leaked the documents she had obtained.
Zuckerberg's defense that it's deeply illogical to think that Facebook's algorithm rewards content that makes people angry. Do you know how he would develop that pushback to say that the algorithms do not do that?
You know what's really interesting about that statement last night, which he posted on his Facebook account, is that he talks about how it's illogical because advertisers would simply not stand for having their brands and their ads placed alongside hateful and toxic content. He says this is just a bad business decision to have this kind of content spread throughout the sites and the apps. What's really interesting about that, Brian, is that advertisers agree. They say, we definitely do not want to be alongside this kind of content, and Facebook has a huge problem, and they're not incentivized to change that problem. A lot of advertisers joined a boycott about a year ago called Stop Hate for Profit, and their whole point, it included really big advertisers like Procter & Gamble and Verizon, and many, many hundreds of smaller brands as well, that said, we're taking a stand and we will for 1 month at least not advertise on the site. But they all came back and they all said the big problem actually is that the company is just too dominant and powerful. We cannot withstand or we cannot afford to not advertise on Facebook because of the scale and the number of eyeballs Facebook has. And so they point to this as an antitrust problem. So Mark Zuckerberg will say that this is illogical because the advertisers are there. The advertisers are saying, no, this is absolutely a problem. And we're only there because you're the only show. You're one of the only places where we can get as much reach as we need to.
And what about how he would push back on the idea that it's bad for children? He also took exception to that in his post last night.
Yeah, what Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg last night have emphasized is that among all of the research, there are also some positive findings that many teenagers say that they find that connecting with people on Instagram has been a net positive thing for them. And Facebook has really tried to train the focus of the public on those findings. But remember, the most difficult and the most troubling findings were about bad self-body image, as well as just generally a lot of teens saying they feel really poorly about themselves after using Instagram, and they feel glued to Instagram. And I think what's happening here is that Facebook has this pattern where they often, through their public relations, try to emphasize the good, and they reject and they deny anything, any sort of accountability or any of the more negative aspects that are brought to light in this case, Frances Haugen, the whistleblower, but numerous, numerous news media stories, and including in our book, where we show pattern of one thing after another of the company really deflecting the blame on others or denying that they truly have these core problems.
And listeners, for any of you who may be confused, why are they talking some about Facebook, some about Instagram in the same breath? Facebook owns Instagram, same company. And listeners, what are your evolving opinions about Facebook, experience of Facebook as a force for good or evil in your own social network circles, including Instagram? Preferences for regulating or not regulating in specific ways. We'll get more into that. Or anything else you want to say or ask with Cecilia Kang, national technology correspondent at the New York Times and co-author of An Ugly Truth, Inside Facebook's Battle for Domination, 646-435-7280, or post your comment or question on Twitter. Use... there's no hashtag for this segment, just tweet at Brian Lehrer, tweet at Brian Lehrer. We'll see your tweets and use relevant ones on the air. Cecilia, if Facebook is pushing America toward polarization, it sounded yesterday like the exception to that is bipartisan unity on criticizing Facebook. We played those clips of Senators Wicker and Markey. How much of that did you hear yesterday?
I heard incredible unanimity between Republicans and Democrats on the need for Congress to act with legislation to regulate internet companies like Facebook. For the last 30 years, there have been no new regulations on the internet companies. And the only regulation that was created about in 1996 was actually to shield internet companies like Facebook from lawsuits for the content that they host. So there is unanimity. How Washington can regulate this company and really make sure that they really craft the right regulation is the big question going forward. And there are a lot of options. And I heard really interesting proposals at that hearing as well.
Would it be accurate to say, before we get into those specific proposals, mm-hmm. that Democrats think Facebook enables right-wing disinformation too much, and Republicans think it censors right-wing or conservative content too much, because both things, we would think, couldn't be true?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. But you know what happened yesterday, Brian, was at the hearing, there was less conversation about the specific content that the two sides are targeting their anger towards, if you will. The conversation was much more about the systems in place at Facebook that amplify harmful content. And that was new. That was absolutely new to hear members of Congress like Senator Blumenthal, Marsha Blackburn, John Thune from South Dakota, and et cetera, talking about algorithms and ranking systems behind the news feed of Facebook and Instagram that amplify the most agitating content. And this was really key. And this is what Frances Haugen had talked about a lot. And this is what her specialty was at Facebook, was the ranking systems behind the newsfeed. Getting into sort of, if you will, the belly of the beast of how Facebook operates was a really new conversation. And there were proposals that were brought up by senators, as well as Frances Haugen, on addressing how Congress can force or compel a company like Facebook to make public and transparent how its algorithms work, to compel Facebook, for example, to share its algorithms and ranking systems with researchers so they can understand the prevalence of misinformation and how hate speech spreads. This is really key. Facebook operates in many ways like a black box. And that was something that Republicans and Democrats agreed with. They all said Facebook should no longer be a black box that has these secret algorithms in place that amplify certain harmful content. These sort of systems and the way it works should be more transparent.
Let me read you two kind of opposite tweets that have come in from listeners as our first listener comments in this segment. One says, I deleted Facebook the day after Trump got elected because my news feed was so toxic, I decided I didn't want to carry that negativity. So that's one. But here's pushback from another listener who writes, is anyone reminded of all the congressional hearings and hysteria over comic books, video games, movie ratings? What was the result of any of that? Not much. This congressional show is going to result in nothing. Energy could be spent on bigger issues. What do you think about that last comment, Cecilia, that labels it as hysteria that has attached in previous generations to other popular media.
Yeah, I would say that this is a different type of technology and media, if you will. This is a company that has a technology that amplifies content faster and more in a more pronounced way than any other technology before. Facebook often likes to compare itself to the telephone or broadcast television. They say that every time a new communications tool like Facebook has been introduced in history, there has been mass hysteria about the disruption that that new communication tool brings. But after using the telephone for a while and after watching broadcast TV, the public usually calms down and realizes that net-net, these new communications tools are positive. But Facebook is very different. Facebook has inside its systems, amplification and ranking systems that amplify the most agitating content. Facebook is in the business of agita, of agitation, and that could be positive agitation or negative agitation, agitating fear or agitating happiness. It's that nuanced sort of middle of the road cut reaction where people don't react actually much is what they don't want because that's not what brings you back. That's really different in the sense that Facebook is able to measure your likes, your comments, your shares, and put that kind of content in the top of, through its algorithms and ranking system, to the top of other news feeds and promote the most emotive content. It's a very different kind of technology. And a very smart person named Renee DiResta, an academic, explains it this way. She says, Facebook talks about its adherence to freedom of expression sort of principle. But freedom of speech, she says, does not mean freedom of reach. It's the reach that differentiates Facebook from other platforms.
So as we come to the last stretch of conversation that we're going to have, here's sort of the money clip from whistleblower Frances Haugen from her testimony yesterday, the one that the media keeps replaying. We tried to put in some different ones along the way first here, but these are the 15 seconds that everybody's hearing.
I believe Facebook's products harm children, stoke division, and weaken our democracy. The company's leadership knows how to make Facebook and Instagram safer, but won't make the necessary changes because they have put their astronomical profits before people.
And it's the last part of that I'm interested in, Cecilia. Won't make the necessary changes because they put astronomical profits before people. What changes could Facebook be making internally to solve the problems we've been discussing? And what types of new regulation that you were mentioning before that they started to come up with yesterday are now being discussed?
Yeah, Frances Haugen, as well as some lawmakers themselves, said that what Facebook could do is to change the way that it amplifies the most agitating content to make sure that harmful content, especially misinformation and hate speech, does not spread rampantly across the site. Putting enough people in place, like in the division that she used to work in, that was actually dissolved after the 2020 election, according to her, to police for misinformation and to make it a huge priority. They were saying, she and lawmakers, that Facebook can continue to be very profitable, not crazy, crazy, insanely profitable as it is today, but still very, very profitable by making these sorts of changes to what kind of content travels the most across the apps. But change will not likely come from within, as evidenced by the Facebook post that Mark Zuckerberg made last night, where he really dug his heels in and said, like, this is just untrue, a lot of the assertions that the whistleblower is making. And a lot of the research has been taken out of context. Facebook will say that they embrace regulation, but I think it's very important to note that it's only specific type of regulation that they will embrace. What I heard yesterday was lawmakers and, of course, Frances Haugen saying that the only thing that can happen going forward is external pressure, and that has to come through regulation. It could be data privacy regulation. It could also be curbs on a speech liability, that essential law that known as Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, that shields companies like Facebook from being sued for the content that they host. It could also be from what Frances Haugen has suggested, is compelling or forcing more transparency of how the systems work, allowing researchers to get into Facebook's algorithmic ranking systems to see why misinformation travels so rampantly, and studying those sorts of systems to bring into the public, so to inform more conversation with lawmakers. And there's, of course, also antitrust action that's happening right now in Washington with the Federal Trade Communications lawsuit to break up Facebook. So there are a menu of things that are being considered. I will also say, Brian, that I've been covering this for a really long time, and I have gone to many, many hearings, including those with Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg and other leaders of Facebook, and nothing has yet been done. There has been no new law for the internet since 1996.
I was just going to say, I know you got to go, but the thing most likely to happen seems to be some kind of antitrust action. And I'm just curious if you think that would stop Instagram from allowing destructive ideas to spread about girls' self-image, or stop Facebook from being a platform for vaccine or climate disinformation or hateful white supremacy or anti-Semitism, as the NAACP president said in the clip we played, that it's a super spreader for. What is making Facebook smaller do to stop the individual smaller branches of Facebook from doing the same thing?
Yeah. I think, first of all, antitrust is going to take a long time. The lawsuit is going to take many years to actually wind its way through this court battle. The antitrust argument is really interesting, and I do think it's separate from looking and trying to address these harms that were discussed yesterday. It's all absolutely tied back to the dominance of Facebook, and you'll see that advertisers, as we talked about, feel like they can't get off because Facebook is so powerful and important for them and their business. So antitrust is part of the conversation, but I just don't know if you're going to address the systemic problems of Facebook's business model and how its system works if you're breaking it apart into companies that still have that same business model.
Cecilia Kang, national technology correspondent at the New York Times and co-author of An Ugly Truth, Inside Facebook's Battle for Domination. Thank you so much for coming on this morning, Cecilia. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.